We academics lead charmed lives, or at least that's what I've been told. We teach for 15 weeks in the fall, take off for 4 or 5 weeks during the holidays, return for 15 more weeks in the spring, albeit punctuated with a very handy and timely spring break. And if we are needed and we so desire, there's 5 weeks of summer school. Sounds like a great gig if you can get it. Of course, we academics know this is a lie because we are working all year on one thing or another, especially our research when we are not busy teaching. And 5-day work weeks often turn into nonstop 7-day weeks with grading, course prep, meetings, and more. This means that while faculty members enjoy the benefits of somewhat flexible schedules on most days, they still have to get the work done, and often that happens at home where spouses and children often await. It can be pretty hard balancing everything, especially when students email you at 9:30 p.m. with an urgent question. Those spouses and children are forced to patiently wait for when their academic parent is free from duties that, at least on paper, never seem like they could manage to consume an entire day. But what if both spouses or partners are academics? And what if they happen to be in the same department? That's the subject of this Buff Speak. Roll the intro. You're listening to Buff Speak, the official podcast of the Paul and Virginia Engler College of Business at West Texas A&M University. I am Dr. Nick Gerlich, your host, as we meet up with the thought leaders making an impact today. When Dr. Eric Hoffman and Dr. Anne Christine Bartel came to campus in the fall of 2016, we knew we were getting a package deal. Both were economists, both earned their PhDs from the University of Kansas, and they were married. It's not uncommon to find married couples in academia because, well, we've had a couple of others here in the College of Business in recent years. But to be so closely aligned in discipline is less likely. Today, Eric is associate professor and the Pickens Professor of Economics, while Anne is associate professor of economics and decision management and is the Hodges Professor of Business. That requires a super wide business card, doesn't it? They have both established themselves as highly qualified teachers and researchers in their field. And, well, from all appearances, you have figured out how to have it all. Satisfying careers, children, home life. Welcome to the show, guys. It's great to have you here.
Thank you.
Before we dive in, I'd like to invite you to tell us a little bit about yourselves, your academic and personal journeys, teaching, research, whatever you think you'd like to share with us.
I guess I'll start. My name is Eric Hoffman. I am from, I say Orlando, Florida, to those who are unfamiliar with where I'm from, but actually, it's Titusville, Florida, which is on the East Coast, the Space Coast. So I grew up with Mickey Mouse and space shuttles was my childhood. Went to the University of Central Florida, where I studied economics and mathematics. Then went to the University of Kansas, KU, where I studied game theory, and that's where I met Anne. And now I'm here. So that's my abridged version of my journey.
Yeah, you wouldn't even get to like the 20th floor in a skyscraper. You'd already be done.
Yeah,
you?
That's right.
That's short and concise. How about you, Anne?
Well, my background is a little bit different. I grew up in a small town in the mountains in Germany. And so I grew up skiing and doing all sorts of winter sports, not quite Mickey Mouse and the Space Coast. I went to the University of Mannheim and studied economics. So that was my undergraduate. And then I was an exchange student during that time at the University of Mannheim in Kansas, at the University of Kansas. And during that time, I got approached by several professors there if I didn't want to consider coming back for a PhD, and I had never in a million years thought that that was even a possibility for me. But once they put that bug in my ear, I kind of started looking into it, and then, well, I came back to KU, also studied game theory. We coincidentally have the same dissertation advisor. And, yep, then met Eric, and the rest is history, they say.
So aside from game theory, have either of you developed any other areas of interest or expertise?
Sort of. I mean, apart from where I started my dissertation, certainly, I would still characterize it as game theory, but I've deviated from my dissertation topic to other topics that interest me. So it would still be game theory, essentially, yes, for sure.
And we've delved a little bit, been diving a little bit into like experiments, looking at data, like not just doing the pure theory, but also seeing how do these theoretical predictions hold up when we compare it to data. And so I've worked a little bit more on that, like trying to analyze the data on the computer, like using statistical software, stuff like that.
Well, the measure of an academic, of course, is how many papers you've published. Oh, you know, at the end of the day, that is the most important thing. Have you published anything together?
I think, all but one of my papers, maybe all but two, have been published together. So, like she said, we had the same dissertation advisor, and so naturally, a lot of the things that we think about are the same. And it just turns out that it's nice to, you know, picking co-authors is a difficult process because sometimes personalities clash or the skill sets are so non-aligned that it's tough to come together and write a paper together. But for us, it's always come natural. And so it's enjoyable and productive both at the same time. And so it's a natural fit. So,
well, I can imagine living together, coming to work together, leaving together gives plenty of opportunity to chat about these things and flesh out different parts of the paper.
I mean, sometimes it does dominate our discussions over the table. I mean, probably less so now that we have kids, but, you know, still we were like, oh, what if we did XYZ in the paper? Would you think that, you know, that sort of thing. And you have to keep that in mind sometimes.
Well, I'm sure the kids don't want to hear about it. They couldn't care less, right?
No.
One time when my parents were visiting, we had just gotten a difficult R&R on a paper. And we kind of slid back into this obsessed mindset of like, we could not let it go. And so my parents are like in the kitchen helping preparing dinner. And here we are also preparing dinner, setting the table, but throwing around ideas of how we're going to satisfy reviewer two. And I think my parents thought we had just completely lost our minds because they were like, what are they doing?
And when you're doing theory, you're surrounded by this mess of papers with equations, and it looks like, you know, something from out of a movie. It looks like somebody's losing their mind. And, but no, I think eventually we probably got it published. But
we did.
There's moments of insanity.
Well, that's great. And as per my example at the beginning, you brought your work home with you, right?
It's almost hard. Yeah, unfortunately, when your job is to publish papers, it's not like you leave your office and then you're not thinking about it. At least for me, it's like, oh, I think I'm this close to solving the problem. If I just did this, then, oh, that doesn't work. And then before you know it, you're in the car. Oh, if I just did this, I got it. But then you turn the corner, that doesn't work either. And then it never stops until you get the correct answer. And that could carry over into, you know, dinner or the next morning.
So tell us about the classes you teach.
I teach some classes on the undergraduate level. So I teach principles of microeconomics and intermediate microeconomics. And then on the graduate level, I teach the quantitative analysis and business class. So that's more like a graduate level statistics class, and also econometrics and forecasting, and also sometimes seminar in microeconomics for graduate students.
And you, Eric?
Yeah, I teach a lot of the same things. I teach principles of economics. I teach intermediate macroeconomics. I teach money and banking. So both of those topics are outside of my dissertation field, if you will. And coming out of KU, I would never have dreamt of teaching macroeconomics or money and banking, but I've come to love it, and I've come to put my own little spin on it, and I think students enjoy it. So those are two of my favorite classes to teach.
So in many of the cases here, if one of you is sick, the other could be the built-in substitute teacher, right?
Yes.
You could just walk right in and be able to slip in and not miss a beat.
Some students might not even notice anything's changed.
Are there any classes you would like to teach?
Oh, sure. I mean, if we could have like an econometrics class for the undergraduate students so that they could get their hands on that a little bit, that would be awesome. Or anything about experimental economics would be fun. I think game theory, of course, I mean, that's like our bread and butter, right? Like that's what we do our research in. So if we could have like a dedicated course for game theory, I think that would be really fun.
Yeah, I mean, I, you know, I'm a very math person. You know, I would like to do something where, and it has happened in classes where I teach a topic and then I really learn something at the end of the day. And that's happened in both my money and banking and intermediate macro courses where genuinely, you know, I'm supposed to be the big expert in everything, you know, economics, because I have a PhD in economics, but sometimes you learn something new. And I've discovered that, you know, in some of these courses, that's the case. And I would love to just do that, say, in a more game theory slash mathematical economics course and approach it from that way. Something that would be, I think that would be both mentally engaging for the students and myself.
Now, you mentioned econometrics. That stirred up some memories of grad school. Maybe not the best ones, because those were hard classes. I remember my master's level class, and it was more just straight algebraic, lots of regressions and stuff like that. But my PhD level class was all in matrices.
Yes.
And that really, that shook me there for a while to make the jump to that. And I finally figured it out and everything. But I have to ask, how do you make econometrics understandable and accessible to an undergrad who may not have all the necessary statistical training?
I mean, they, our undergraduates do have some statistical training, right? They do take a statistics class. And then, yeah, I think just focusing on like maybe something that you can visualize, right? Like sticking with like one Y variable and only one X variable. And then you can kind of work out a lot of stuff a little bit more easily. And we don't need to do matrix algebra. I would not start doing matrix algebra with undergraduates. That would maybe be taking it a little bit too far.
Yeah. It was like going from English to Greek.
Yes.
Basically, literally and figuratively. And it was a lot more difficult.
Well, to me, it was, oh, that's why they made me take that course in matrix algebra. Because then once I got to econometrics, I was like, oh, that's where we're using it. And I mean, I enjoyed it because I like doing math. But yeah, no, I think for undergraduates, just maybe focusing a little bit more on the intuition of like, what is it that is happening inside the computer when you press that button and say, regress this on this, like what is the computer doing, and what are some of the shortcomings that you might encounter, like what does this tell you and what does it not tell you? Because it's easy to sometimes get a little bit too excited when you see like results pop up on the computer screen, like you're like, I've solved the economy, here's the solution, and the answer unfortunately oftentimes is not quite.
So let's talk about love, okay? How did you guys meet?
Ooh, wow. My earliest memory is meeting in the break room at KU. And I guess every time I run that by her, I don't know if she remembers that.
Couples usually have different stories, different memories of how they met.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, so I think it was just, you know, because she was a year ahead of me at KU and I was, you know, the year behind, and just ran into each other essentially, and I remember that being in the break room. So
so a mutual love of econometrics turned into a personal
attraction. At that point, you know, we were both young in the graduate program, and we didn't even know, I think, at least, yeah. I didn't know in which direction I really wanted to go, and it just so happened that I think we both independently selected into the same sort of topic, which I guess gave us more opportunities to talk to each other in that sense, you know, but sort of chance, you know.
And so what's your account of this? Is it the same?
I do not necessarily, I don't dispute that we met in the break room, because I do remember there was like this lunch and a lot of new students came in. And so you would have been one of the new students coming in. And so I don't dispute that we met and talked, but like, no, my first memory is one time we were out with a group of friends at like a local brewery, and we just happened to be sitting next to each other for that time, and we just ended up talking, and I was like, man, that was a really nice guy.
So one thing led to another, and you got married, and when was that?
2016.
So same year you came to WT.
Right. So, I mean, that's an interesting story.
Yes.
Because
okay,
they say
tell
never
us.
This is a so-called two-body problem, right? That's, you know, this is derived from the problem of physics. And the n-body problem is figuring out how the gravitation works between n bodies with gravitational force, and then the easier problem is the two-body problem, where there's only like a moon and an Earth. That's it comes from physics, right? And so that's where it's derived from. But in academia, it is how do you get two spouses, two married, a couple at the two bodies, two people at the same university, or happily married, happily situated in two jobs. Because in academics, unless you're an absolute superstar, you go where you're drafted in some sense, right? And we were aware of this, but we'll figure it out with some sort of, it didn't have to be rationalized at that moment. So, but we did face the two-body problem, and it's not nice, because she took a job in Virginia. I stayed another year in graduate school, and then I took a job in Memphis, and then she took a job in Wisconsin. And so we wound up spending the first year and a half to 2 years of our marriage apart.
Well, we weren't married.
Married yet. But, excuse me, not marriage, but, relationship or...
Well, yeah.
We spent 2 years apart.
We spent 2 years apart,
Apart, right? That's actually before we got
married.
As a couple, right?
Long distance.
As a series, right.
Long distance. Right. The airlines were quite sad once we finally moved in together again, because we stopped buying so many plane tickets.
And so I was at a point where okay, I'm just going to go work at a convenience store or something, and she can be the professor. I don't care. At some point, we have to make this work. And I was sitting in my apartment in Memphis, and I got a call from West Texas A&M, and they say, well, we're interested in your application. We'd like to, see if you're interested in the job. And I said, well, that sounds great, because this was early in the job market. So this was probably sometime in December or November, something like that. And I'm like, well, we need two jobs, and I'm not going to just say yes to one job because we need two jobs. So I said, and I forget who it was who had called me. And I said, well, do you guys have two jobs? That's the two body problem. And they say, no. I say, okay, that's unfortunate. I guess good luck on the job market searching for your candidate. And we hung up, and that was that. Except for a week later, I get a call back from West Texas A&M. We have two jobs. And I said, okay, we'll take them. we hung up, and then I called Ann and I said, hey, Amarillo, where's that? Google map that. That's where we're going. Because we now have two jobs, and it didn't matter if the job was on the moon, to be honest with you, because the two body problem is not an easy problem to solve. So without having ever been to Texas in my life or knowing where Amarillo or Canyon was, we accepted the job. We got an apartment on the internet, said this one looks good, we'll take it, and that's that. So it's kind of a interesting route to where we are now.
I can see how the two body problem can be problematic, whether you're in very different disciplines or, especially if you're in the same one, because what are the odds that a department is going to need two people to teach the courses you teach? Same specialty areas.
Yeah. I think we had I always say we had the world's worst two-body problem, because we're just same advisors, same specialty area. We had a ton of interviews with the same schools when we were on the job market the year before, because, they were looking at both of our applications and were like, yeah, they both look kind of like, not the same candidate, but very similar candidates. So it was really lucky that we ended up finding.
Well, and it goes back to that first job that you took. Because we had interviewed at the same place, and I got a call from this location, from this school, and they say, well, we're interested in your application. Would you be interested in following up on a further interview? I had known she had interviewed there and she did really well, and that she was a year ahead of me. And so I did a quick calculation, thinking they're interested in this field. They're interested in people from KU. She did really well in the interview. I could accept this job, or I can say I'm not interested in the chance that she'll be next. And so I went that route. I said, no, thank you. I'll pass. I'll keep searching. Sure enough, later that day or even that hour, her phone rings and she gets that job and that offer, and she accepts it, and off she goes to Virginia. And then I stayed an extra year in school.
Well, it all ended well, didn't it? You're here.
it was quite a route,
Amarillo
though.
On Google Maps.
So, but if you're asking me how to navigate that route, it was we hit every rock in the ocean in some sense. So I'm not an expert. To do it again, I don't know. I mean, that might not work out so nice.
No, I think you need just a little bit of luck.
If you're in that situation,
like, especially if you're like us, so similar, you need to be a little bit lucky. I mean, we were thinking, like, could we find two jobs that are like, you know, 2 hours apart so that we could live in the middle and everybody commutes an hour? Or we were looking at, could we get ourselves into like a larger metropolitan area where there's more different universities, different colleges? Could one of us teach community college, something like that? I mean, we were considering all sorts of options at that point, but yeah.
How many kids do you have today?
I have three, and we have two together. Yes.
And you're all in the same household now?
My older one, she is in Ohio, and she's planning on coming down and studying at West Texas. So we will pretty soon probably have four in the house.
Wow.
Yes, that'll be
lots of lots of mouths to feed.
That's
and
right.
And conversations to have. And,
that's right.
Teaching and all that, all apart from the things you do around here.
That's right.
That sounds like a pretty full-time job right there by itself. And you came here on a study abroad or something similar from Mannheim. Did you ever in your life picture yourself coming to the U.S., finishing your professional degrees, finding love, finding a job?
No. I told my family when I was leaving for the PhD program, I told them, yeah, I'm going to get this degree. It takes 5 years, and then I'll be back and looking for a job. And I forget who it was. Maybe some uncle, some aunt, somebody in my family was jokingly saying, like, oh, no, she's going to meet somebody, and she's going to stay. And I said, no, I'm just going to get my degree, and I'm going to come back, and I'm going to look for a job in Germany, and that's that. And yeah, so nope, not in my wildest dreams did I think it would play out like this, but here we are.
I have to ask, do you ever have any academic disagreements? And I mean specifically things about economics.
I mean,
I don't think, philosophically, like,
no.
If we're talking about broader, you know, philosophical disagreements, I don't think we have any of those. But, you know, when we're writing papers together, we do, you know, sometimes I like to describe myself as sort of the bigger picture person, and she's very grounded. And like, I'll throw out 100 bad ideas, and she'll say 99 of those are crap, but, you know, that other one was good, right? And so I can't see that sometimes, see the forest through the trees in some sense, but she's very good at filtering some of the nonsense that I throw out there. And so we will sort of have this back and forth and eventually sort of converge on, you know, publishable ideas sometimes.
Yeah, but you're also very good at like telling the story, right? Like of how sometimes I get too caught up in, well, this detail should come here and this detail should come here and this should be here. And I'm focusing on all like the nitty gritty pieces that we need. And then you go, yeah, but let's tell it like this so that it's like easier for the reader, that there's an arc, that there's a story, that people understand. What's the story that we're telling in the paper?
I think you need both. You need both.
You need both.
You need the strategy, and then you need the tactics. You need the details, and then the larger goal, right? And so we work together that way.
Well, I think you've got it made in this regard, because so many couples may come from different political backgrounds, different religions, and so forth, and that just creates situations where bad things can happen, big disagreements and so forth. But you've got this very important thing all figured out. You already agree on the economics for the most part, and you see it maybe from a different angle across the street, but you're still seeing the same thing.
Yes.
And that's the important part. Well, balancing all of these things that you have to do, classes, research, marriage, kids, how does a couple like Eric and Ann do it? After the break, we're going to take a closer look.
The MBA is the most popular graduate degree in the United States, and with good reason. It leads to better jobs, promotions, and salary increases. At the Paul and Virginia Engler College of Business at West Texas A&M University, our MBA program is entirely online for when you're ready to make that move. With as few as 31 credit hours and specializations offered in 5 areas, you can fast-track your career in as little as 18 months. Whether you're looking for a promotion or initial job placement, you'll stand head and shoulders above the competition. And because we've been teaching online since 1997, we're not the new kids on the block. Trust your education and career to dedicated faculty who are not only experts in their fields, but also old pros in the online arena. Our consistently high rankings say it all. A GMAT waiver is available. We're AACSB accredited and among the most elite of business schools around the world. Reach for the stars and do it with a WT MBA in hand. For more information, find us at wtamu.edu/COB or call 806-651-2500. From the Texas Panhandle to the world, we're here to help you reach those stars.
I know that both of you live extremely busy lives, and yet you do it just fine. I see you coming and going. I know of the constraints of parenthood, been there and done that. It ranges from picking up the kids after school to all of their fun activities that they seem to be dialed into until about the age of 18, and then they move off finally. But it's a never-ending day, isn't it? You've always got something to do. I mean, I know what the time of the day it is in the afternoon without looking at my watch. If I see you two walking down the hall, it's like, oh, it must be 2:30.
Our lives have become a little bit more structured now.
Yeah,
right?
Yes. There you go. That's the word here. What is a typical day in the life of your household like?
Well, I think at this point we're up at 6 because one of the kids has woken us up. Then we have the first one has to be at school at 8:45.
No, 7:45.
7:45, yes. I'm sorry. You'll be surprised at what a lack of sleep over 4 years does to you. To your ability to recall these things. 7:45. So we have a little bit of time in the morning to get going. The next one has to be at school here at West Texas A&M at the daycare here. Then we're here, we're working, and then we have to pick up at 2:15, whatever, you tell it.
3:10,
exactly. Don't ask me the exact. We're there, right? Home, then we both like to do a little bit of working out, so I watch the kids, she works out. She watches the kids. I work out, then dinner, then bath, bedtime, the whole nine yards. And it's pretty structured. There's really not like a half an hour to make many changes in that.
So lather, rinse, repeat.
That's right.
One day to the next.
That's right. And you know, at some point, it's just got to be. You have to find some sort of structure that works and go with it.
How do you deal with the inevitable fatigue?
Coffee. I think Starbucks downstairs here on campus loves me because I buy way too much coffee.
Yeah, caffeine, sure.
Just caffeine. That's caffeine for the win. Huh?
That's right.
Gets you through it all. And what about on the weekends? Is that like time to collapse or is it just two more extra days of the week?
I'd say it's a little bit less structured on the weekends, but still, I mean, there's also always so many things that you didn't get to during the week, right? Where it's like you gotta go to the grocery store, and the amounts of food that disappear in our household surprise me every single week when I come home. I'm like, there's no way we can eat all of this. Well, and then come Friday evening, the refrigerator is almost empty again. So yeah, no, do run the errands and the weekends. But we also like to just, you know, do some stuff like take the kids to the park or go to the Discovery Center or stuff like that, just like little outings as a family.
Yeah.
Well, depending on the age of your kids, you wind up, I'm just recalling my own experiences here, you wind up with all kinds of athletic and theater and other pursuits that require copious amounts of time and sometimes the willingness to travel.
Mm-hmm. We're not quite there yet. Like our kids are still, the oldest is 5, so... we haven't hit that phase yet where they have all these outside activities. So yeah, that'll be the next wrinkle that we will have to iron out, like once they really start.
Yeah, you'll be picking them up at 3:10 and getting to someplace at 3:30 for gymnastics or whatever. And it just goes on and on. And And before long, it's time to go to bed, right?
That's right.
And you start it all over the next day.
Yep.
Do you ever split up your obligations? Like you go one direction with some kids and you go the other direction with the other kids? Or is it all together?
Well, it just sort of happens naturally. Sometimes I like to go take a walk and one of the kids wants to go and one doesn't. And if both go, then she gets a little bit of a break, or sometimes she goes to do something with the kids. There's really no structure there. You know, when we're in our free time, sometimes that sort of thing just happens organically. So, yeah.
Well, that's good. And what about you, Anne?
Yeah, I'd say sometimes we just do some stuff with them individually, or sometimes we just go as a group, like, yeah. Just however it works best. And like sometimes also the kids have like their doctor's appointments, dentist appointments. Then it's like, okay, you take one to school, I take the other to the appointment.
I mean, one thing that makes it difficult is neither of us have our family here. I mean, my family's in Florida, her family's in Germany. So, you know, not many babysitters. I mean, very rarely do we do that. But that's our routine there.
So other than the time you can lock yourself in your office and pretend like you're not there, do you get any alone time?
Far and few between, like I said, you know.
Working out, probably.
Like, yeah, yeah.
Like, that's the 1 hour of the day where I know.
Or sometimes I'm sitting on the couch and you're talking to me and she wonders if I heard anything she said because I'm alone in my thoughts.
So what's a good strategy for managing all these things? I mean, and staying on task all day long, you know, rigidly. It's like, oh, it's such and such time. We gotta be moving on. How do you do this day after day after day?
Well, I think you said an analogy with like juggling the, you know, juggling balls or something like that the other day, where there are some that, you know, you just can't let drop, right? The glass, what was it?
Glass balls and rubber balls.
Yeah. You can't let the glass ones drop. And so to sit here and pretend that sometimes we don't let one of the rubber balls drop would be false. It's not like it's a flawless sort of routine. But you have to focus, you have to prioritize on what has to be done. And you know that there's little wiggle room in this sort of the structure that you have for yourself to recover from, you know, you can't just fall asleep at the wheel. And so you get the important things done, and then whatever's left over, just do your best.
Well, at the risk of being cliche, teamwork makes the dream work.
That's right.
You are a team. You've got it together, and you make it happen one way or the other. What happens when one of the kiddos gets sick? Who stays home?
The person who doesn't have to teach a class on campus that day. So it's right. if Eric teaches, let's say he teaches Mondays and Wednesdays and I teach Tuesdays and Thursdays, then whoever does not teach on campus is going to stay home with the kid that day.
Yeah.
And have you ever gotten to the point where, well, you're so deep into the parenthood at this point, it probably feels like there's no way out. But but can you begin to picture a time, let's say 15 or 20 years down the road, in which it's just the two of you and the nest is empty?
That's sort of it's like an abstract, abstract idea at this point, thought. Right?
And yet it'll happen at some point. And you'll look back and say, boy, that went fast.
Yeah, I'm sure. That's what people say. Sure,
that's what everybody says.
That's what everybody says. And I'm like, you know, that's what everybody says. But then when I'm on the other side of it, then that's what I'm saying, right?
Exactly.
So
sure,
I'll believe you.
So how much academic training do you do with your kids? I mean, your kids are lucky. They got two PhDs for mom and dad. That's a lot of degrees to go around. Do you guys like talk in theory? What do you talk about?
I think we get more training from them than they do from us at this point. No, I mean, we make it a point to practice, you know, the basic math and stuff like that. And it's important for us. And she speaks with them in German to try to get that in their brains. So, you know, little things like that. Nothing at this point. It's not like a, you know, boot camp or anything like that.
So they're going to be bilingual math whizzes.
Well, we'll see.
That's the hope. But nothing that's like, you know, like I said, a super stressful training environment or anything like that.
Yeah, well, it sounds like they're already going to be head and shoulders above all their classmates in this regard. I mean, there's a lot to be said for having academics for parents. I mean, you've got kind of a built-in resource there.
Yep, hopefully. I mean,
hopefully. We'll see.
We take it serious. We take education seriously. But, you know, it's not like they have to be professors themselves. They can do whatever makes them happy.
So, very good. When we come back, we'll pick Eric and Ann's brains to get at their recommendations for healthy, happy marriages for two busy professionals.
There's a reason why our programs are rated so highly by independent reviewers. We are committed to continuously improving what we do. Whether it is in the classroom or online, the Paul and Virginia Engler College of Business strives to stay ahead of the curve, not behind it. Join us in the classroom or online and see the difference. We're WCSB accredited and among the most elite business schools around the world. Reach for the stars and do it with a WT business degree in hand. For more info, find us online at wtamu.edu/cob or call 806-651-2525. From the Texas Panhandle to the world, we are here to help you reach for those stars.
Clearly, you two have found the secret sauce for making everything work for good. You get a lot of stuff done here at WT, yet you also manage to take care of your kids and their busy schedules, and your family will be expanding soon. This can only mean one thing. You had unutilized capacity the whole time. This sounds like an economics lesson here, I guess. I applaud you. I think that's great, and I suspect many others do too. Tell us, what do you recommend for aspiring couples with demanding professions? And that means from professorates all the way to the C-suite. How do you survive the choppy waters that all of us face?
I mean, I don't know if I can say anything that's not going to sound cliche, but I think it's just flexibility on both sides, you know, to understand that sometimes one person's going to have to pick up the weight here, and then the next day the other person's going to have to carry the weight a little bit more, and to understand it's not going to be perfect all the time, and then to just keep powering through. I mean, I can't pretend and sit here and say that, you know, we have this all mapped out and, you know, perfectly for the next 20 years. We take it day by day and just deal with the problems that arise and do it the best we can.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's like, don't keep score. Like, it doesn't always have to be 50-50. There are going to be times when one person will be doing more, and maybe more in one way, and the other person is doing more in a different way. And yeah, just always remembering you're a team. You're in this together. And yeah, that's just, I don't know. We're just both. I think we balance each other out well, because I mean, the German in me just can't help it. I have to plan things. And so it's hilarious when we go on vacation. Like, I will be the one with the planning list that has everything written down, what needs to be in my suitcase and the kids' suitcases. And it's a list, and I check it off, and I check it twice and three times. And then Eric goes and packs like 10 minutes before we have to leave.
If they forget a pair of pants, we'll buy it when we get there.
They have stores. You know,
we'll figure it out.
Yes. You know, he's like, as long as we have the passports and the credit card, we're good to go. And I think, you know, that you need both. You need, to some degree, you sometimes need the person who plans a little bit more to make sure that things are going to
that we
run,
actually get there.
That we actually get there, that we have flights, that we have a hotel and all these sorts of things. But at the same time, I think sometimes he can talk me off the edge a little bit to not obsess too much about like everything running like a German train back in the day before everything went downhill there.
Well, you guys, you know, clearly met in grad school, and you made it through the two-body problem, as have other couples. What are your thoughts on couples who get together after they've met themselves in the workplace? I know my parents. Well, I wouldn't be here if a workplace romance hadn't happened back in 1957.
Mm-hmm. All HR issues aside on that, but you know, that would probably be in some sense easier than
you're
trying,
already there. You're already there. You don't have to look
for a job. Right. Yeah, exactly. You know, on the other hand, it could be difficult if it all goes south. Then who's going to be the one that, you know, it could make an awkward situation, right? But I think just getting there would be going to be easier if two people met already figuring out that two-body problem, you know.
And your thoughts on this, Anne?
Yeah, and also I think it helps if you meet somebody who understands what your job is like and what the demands of your jobs are. that can sometimes also make it a little bit easier, because I think if, say, you have one partner who's an academic and the other one is not, then sometimes they might not understand that, well, that paper needs to be worked on even though it is Saturday afternoon and it just needs to get done. There's a deadline approaching, it needs to be done. And like, if you work in the same place, then you naturally understand what the other's job looks like. And so it makes it a little bit easier to coordinate.
In the 9-to-5 job, you don't really have to take your job home with you, but in academics, it's a little bit more open-ended. And as long as you get the work done within the time frame, so academics tend to, you know, take their work home a little bit more with them. So that understanding there is beneficial.
Yeah.
Well, we've talked a lot about the family time where one or both of you are interacting with the kids. And we talked about those scarce few moments when you're working out and have a little bit of private time. What about the you time? How do you handle that? And you mentioned you don't have any built-in babysitters here. So what do you do? I mean, you got to have you time.
Oh, do we? I guess. I don't know.
Somebody. I mean, we get like 30 minutes in the evening after the kids go to bed. Like, because right now they go to bed a little bit late due to naps and stuff like that. So we don't get terribly much, but I mean.
And then by the time they're in bed, we're watching TV, and then one of us is asleep within 30 minutes, and then bam, you know. So, I don't know. I didn't know that was written in the Constitution. I'd like to revisit that and demand my rights. Yeah,
like a date night or something, right?
Sure.
Wouldn't that be great?
Yes.
I mean, when parents come to visit or something like that, they offer.
Yeah.
And then we get a date night every now and then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you get used to eating at Mr. Gaddy's or, you know, kid-friendly places, right?
Yeah.
No elegant dining yet, because it's going to be lost on any kid, of course. And you don't get that opportunity too often unless, you know, you've got family members coming in and they're willing to sit with the kiddos.
Yeah.
There.
I mean, I guess the one thing I would say in that regard, and this is probably bad parenting, is the iPhones and the iPads. If you really want to go to a restaurant and have them not completely destroy the place, you can just sit for 30 minutes. They can watch this stupid thing and, you know, try to enjoy that. But other than that, it's difficult.
And I mean, they also get better as they get older.
Yes.
They get better at sitting through stuff like that. I mean, When we travel, we take him to a lot of restaurants, right?
Yeah.
Because inevitably, when you're traveling, you have to eat out a little bit more. Mm-hmm. And so it's gotten better. It was an absolute disaster in the beginning, but...
Yeah,
but you figured it out.
It's getting... Well, they learn.
That's good. You know, I don't think there are any manuals for parenthood. I mean, there are plenty of books about that try to give you ideas of how to do things right and so forth. But when it comes down to actually doing it, there isn't a manual for it, and you wind up having to just find your way.
Yeah, and in some sense, I don't think you need it. I mean, you say, well, how am I going to, you know, you plan so far ahead and say, how is everything going to work out? But then you're there, and it's just somehow you do it. I mean, it's one way or the other. Yeah, you figure it out.
And every situation is unique.
That's
you
right.
Know, the chemistry is different. You got boys, you got girls, different ages,
that's
different
right.
abilities and needs and so forth. And it's up to mom and dad to just... figure it out, right?
That's right.
And it appears that you guys have done it very, very well. I'm
Thank
happy
you.
For you. My guests today have been Dr. Eric Hoffman, Associate Professor and the Pickens Professor of Economics, and Dr. Ann Christine Bartel, Associate Professor of Economics and Decision Management, and also the Hodges Professor of Business. Thanks for being here, guys. I appreciate it. Fade to black. Roll credits. You've been listening to Buff Speak from the Paul and Virginia Engler College of Business at West Texas A&M University. Our executive producer is Justin Lovell, and Allison Hunter is our associate producer. Our co-editors are Maverick Evans and Paul Torres. Lindsay Bjork is our director of marketing and outreach initiatives, which includes overseeing Buff Speak. Dr. Jeffrey Babb is director of accreditation and is our technical consultant. Finally, Dr. Amjad Abdulat is dean of the college. You can find us online at wtamu.edu/COB for more information about our programs. Be sure to check out our many academic offerings. Come for the quality, stay for the small classes, affordable tuition, and friendly, approachable professors. And look online at our faculty blog, profspeak.com, for more insights. You can listen to BuffSpeak on your favorite podcast portal, as well as on our website, buffspeak.biz. And if you like what you've been hearing, don't be afraid to share us with your friends, colleagues, and family. Word of mouth has always been the best form of advertising. Until next time, love one another. For the Paul and Virginia Engler College of Business at West Texas A&M University, I am Dr. Nick Gerlich. And as always, go Buffs! BuffSpeak.